This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness, Human Events, joins me. And we welcome Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. Too long away from us, we get to update ourselves quickly. There is an election at hand in Israel, the fifth in the last 4 days. In any event, what's important here is that the vote is turning out, again, contentious, but very carefully presenting as who is going to have the majority seats in the Knesset. I go to an appeal by Prime Minister Lapid now. It's not about me, it's about us. Fair enough. So we're looking at not personality voting, but we're looking at policy voting. Malcolm, what can we say on the eve of the election? You can do this in 90 seconds. Thank you.
Yeah, I can do it in a lot less. You're welcome. It's good to be with you both. It's a real toss-up. The latest polls still show it's 60-60. They're not allowed to poll in the days immediately before the election, and then campaigning stops. So it's now up to the people, and it could go either way, or it could go no way, which means that you would go into a sixth election in 4 years. Because of the balance and the system, which is different than ours. So right now, it's a dead heat, and they will fight over the affiliations of different the smaller parties, see how many of them make the 3.5% threshold, and then negotiate a deal, which the president then will assign to somebody to try to form a government, whoever can come up with the largest number of members of the Knesset backing their slate.
The assumption then is that it's between Mr. Lapid and Mr. Netanyahu to assemble 61 seats at minimum. Is that correct, Malcolm?
Exactly.
We move.
And if nobody can get a 61, then you move to elections eventually.
Right. The sixth election in 5 days. Yes, I understand. Now we go to an election that has been decided in Brazil in these last hours. The former president, Lula da Silva, winning the election over the present president, President Bolsonaro. What does this mean for the Middle East, especially because of the very strong narco-terrorist chain of command that flows from the South America to the Middle East?
Well, there are very many interlocking concerns and issues that arise from the result of the election, which, as you know, follows on the elections in Chile, in Argentina before, in Colombia, in Costa Rica, other countries where we saw leftists coming to power. Mr. Lula certainly is one of them. Mr. Bolsonaro was a rightist. And the question of how this will affect the policy, he certainly will change priorities to more focusing on the poor and focusing on the climate issues, he says. But he also will be closer to some of the more radical regimes, including potentially Iran. And this could be another change as we see this revolution taking place in South America, which certainly should be of great concern in Washington. I don't see commensurate concern yet being expressed, but we're seeing a continent being lost and the Iranians increasing their role there. They just bought 2.5 million acres of land in Venezuela. Which should send chills up everybody's spine to when they read about it, that this is part of the expansion of Iranian influence in South America. The Chinese are there, the Russians are there, Turkey is there. And so this election is another level of concern for us.
Malcolm, one piece of news that strikes me as perhaps helpful, the Arab League is meeting in Algeria in these next hours. What is the agenda?
So this is a very important meeting. It's the first, I think, since the COVID, where they'll have face-to-face participation. We'll have to see, what level of representation there is from the Arab countries, to heads of state, to foreign ministers, who will come, whether Saudi Arabia's crown prince, who it will likely not participating, supposedly on doctor's advice, but will he send his brother, the new prime minister, or someone else? They see the issues, which could be very divisive, and we could see things breaking up, not only regarding Algeria's role, but also divisive issues like Ethiopia, disagreements over Libya, especially Egypt and Algeria, the Algerian-Moroccan rift, which is very serious and has been sustained, criticism of Turkey, some opposition to Iran. Amongst many of the attendees will want to attack Iran, and especially the proxy militias in Iraq, Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, etc. So we could see, and Palestinian issues are obviously going to be raised by some. The question is, will they be able to forge some sort of a common front on any of these issues? Will they be able to emerge out of this as a coherent body, or will we see further divisions emerging out of this first meeting in several years?
Thaddeus, you have concerns for Malcolm.
Yes, Malcolm, can you give us an update regarding Iran, especially the protests?
I can, and I think people should be paying attention these days to what is happening there. The next days in Tabriz, Tehran, and other places, even clergy have been speaking out. If you saw that the government of Canada under Trudeau made an announcement that they will not give safe haven to people from the regime who tried to escape to Canada. But we also have a concern that many of them have ties to the United States, including having children here. And I think America would be wise to issue a similar declaration to put the pressure on them to help put an end to the suffering, which has taken hundreds of lives. We see that the base of it has expanded in Baluchistan and Kurdistan and other places. There have been ongoing manifestations. And we see that many of the IRGC and others are not willing to participate in the protests against the and responding to the protesters, and especially when it comes to shooting. We see that the opposition seems to have more weapons, but in trying not to use them, they are using wiser methods where they are enlisting the families, the soldiers, and broader-based support, especially universities and schools, where we're seeing an escalation in terms of the participation, the frustration levels. We see the absence, the weapons that can come in from Iraq and other places. So the young are leading this, continue to lead us, the women, the movement for democracy, even though the number of the leaders were arrested, taken to Tehran, and we've not heard from them. There's a lot of concern on the part of the families with the thousands, many thousands of young people, very young, including children who have been arrested. And the local level leadership, the security councils in each province, have been addressing the issues and find that they're really not capable of dealing it, and there's no coordination between them. So Europe has added a few more sanctions. We're seeing some more responses coming from outside. There should be much, much more and more support for the groups, but it's amazing how they've sustained it, how they've been able to broaden the participation, and especially among some of the ethnic communities in Iran.
Malcolm, what about the oil sales?
Yes, so there are, what is sustaining them today and what's enabling them to do so much of the mischief that they're engaged in, both in Iran but also outside, is the sales that they've been able to do of oil. And we are not doing enough, meaning the United States, whatever sanctions we have put in, we have put more of them on. It's not sufficient because they claim a 580% increase in sales of oil. We're seeing also that they're offering their dark fleet of oil tankers, meaning those with the transponders off, to the Russians to be able to export their oil more efficiently and in larger sums than they have, amounts than they have till recently. And we see the IRGC sending troops have seen Iranian troops going to Crimea to train them. Their increased use of weapons and the assault against the urban areas today. The IAEA has documented that there's enough uranium enriched in Iran for a bomb that could enrich to 60%, way above the 3.67 that the JCPOA, or 20% that they claim. They can produce at 90% very quickly. There's at least almost 4,000 kilograms of enriched uranium that they have available to them. So we're seeing that they have advanced. There doesn't seem to be any negotiations on the JCPOA. Protests have spread to some of the sports groups and to other segments of the society, including the actors and the movie segment, which is very popular in Iran. So we are seeing whether the outcry from the people will resonate with the people around the world, and that they will be able to join. We see the percentages, though, of the population who are joining. 85% of the population of Iran is under 55 years of age. And the segment of those who are 20 and below is very significant. And they are the ones leading the demonstrations today. So we could have some very interesting results in the next couple of days to see how far they can sustain it and how broad the demonstrations, because they're coming up to the 40th anniversary of the death of many of the young people in the initial shootings. And as you saw this week on the 40th anniversary of the first killing, that it becomes an occasion for people to hold ceremonies in cemeteries and elsewhere. And that becomes the occasion for clashes with the military. So it's going to be a very significant week to watch.
We go to Egypt, Malcolm, because there's a new capital rising, you remind me, east of Cairo, which is extremely overcrowded. And according to the press reports, doesn't work. You can't get from one part of the city to another without traffic jams. They're building a new capital. What is significant here is it used to be Alexandria 2,000 years ago. Then sometime around 500 years ago, Cairo became the center of Egypt. And now this new capital, which looks like something on another planet, Malcolm. It looks like the community planning of people who visited us from Andromeda. Is it regarded so far as successful because they're building it out of the desert?
It's not considered successful yet. It is a remarkable development. President Sisi had the vision to see that Cairo was too crowded. You can't move around Cairo. And this is scrolled across a patch of land four times the size of Washington, D.C. It includes a skyscraper that the Chinese built that's 1,293 feet tall, the tallest building in Africa. There's a sprawling military complex on the edge of the new city. It's called the Octagon, and it's seven times as large as the Pentagon. Tens of thousands of apartments have been built, though few are finished completely. And it appears like a big construction site, some say, but a very important one, and well thought out and planned. And the question is whether they can fulfill the dream, the vision that the President Sisi had of building this new capital that will be able to accommodate Egypt's future growth.
It looks, Malcolm, like science fiction. So the plan is to move the people of Cairo to here, or this just the high end? It looks like you would be living in luxury with these circular roads, very much that somebody would draw with a high-end architecture tools, circles within circles.
It's like many other countries in Central Asia, in the rest of the world, in Africa, where leaders, you want to have a symbol of your capital be something that you can be proud of, boast to your citizen, and serve a utilitarian purpose at the same time.
We go to one other piece of news that looks positive, Malcolm. Greece has a flight school in cooperation with Israel. Is this evidence of entrepreneurship in the Eastern Mediterranean? What does it demonstrate, Malcolm?
Well, it does demonstrate the closeness of the relationship and the importance of the ties between the countries and the faith and trust that has been established, and how they're seeing common interests emerge. And we've seen this in so many ways between Greece, Cyprus, and Israel in the Mediterranean Initiative and much broader. But on Friday, they launched the operations of this new international pilot training center. It's located on an Air Force base near Kalamata, which is the southern city of Greece. And Elbit, the Israeli defense contractor, will run the facility. This is almost $1.5 billion deal, more than that. That is a reflection. Not only we see it in the Air Force and Naval and other military joint exercises, but here in the training, and so that the next generation of pilots will also be able to communicate and coordinate better.
Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness and Human Events. We're welcoming the Dusty One. He's back also, the bullwhip, the bag of tricks. Indiana Hohnlein is next. I'm John Batchelor.